And on our show today, well, let me mention first that our show is made possible with support from the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. In their Happy Holidays Holiday Pops concert featuring Santa singing and a whole lot of fun, Saturday, December 18th at Sangamon Auditorium, Springfield, and Sunday, December 19th at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Information is at ilsymphony.org. Our show today will include, as you heard just at the end of Vic's program, a conversation with Maro Kawabata, who was born in Kyoto, Japan, at the age of 12. He first saw Bill Monroe and the Bluegrass Boys perform on Japanese television, and he was hooked ever since. And he'll be joining banjo player Greg Cahill and a couple of other special guests Saturday evening for an evening of bluegrass starting at 9:30 at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. And later on the show, Paul Hinson is a member of the Mugduck Pipers, who are a group of Highland bagpipers going to be giving a Christmas concert tomorrow night in Champaign. I hope you'll stay with us. My guest on this portion of Live and Local, is Maro Kawabata, who is a flat-picking guitarist, he's described as, and he's going to be joining banjo player Greg Cahill, who is the leader of the Special Consensus Bluegrass Band, and also a couple of other guests, Rachel Johnson on fiddle, Jill Stargardt on bass, at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana Saturday evening at around 9 or 9:30. And current resident of Elgin, Illinois, so we have him on the phone with us right now. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate that very much.
I heard about this gig from Sam Payne, who plays with the Corn Desert Ramblers here in Urbana, and I have to admit that yours was not a name that I knew before. But once he mentioned you to me, I got on the online, of course, and your MySpace page has lots of tunes on it, and I really enjoy your playing.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
You probably get this reaction a lot, but it was surprised to me to learn that somebody from Japan would get into bluegrass.
How? Yes, it is.
Yeah. So you do hear this a lot.
Yes, I think that's probably the first three questions that I can. A lot of people asking, almost 99% of them asking that question.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I suppose it's kind of an obvious one, so I'm just starting with it.
Yes, in 1974, Mr. Bill Monroe came to Japan to perform his music, and I was too young to go to the concert back then, but I saw him on TV. They had a music show, a weekly music show, and I was just really into that TV programs. And I was watching that TV, and I saw Mr. Monroe came on the TV screen, and I listened to his songs played on the TV station. I felt something very spiritual, and it just really caught my mind ever since. So a couple of days later, I went to buy his albums. I think that the first album I ever bought of his was the instrumental album with the Rawhide and Cripple Creeks and things like that. Ever since, I hooked with bluegrass music since I was 12 years old.
How popular was bluegrass music in Japan at the time?
Well, at that time, I think that there are so many, a lot of folk music movement and influence to Japanese college students get involved with traditional American folk music. And I think the bluegrass music was considered as one of the folk music. It was really popular back then, but I didn't find anybody my age getting into that music, and most of them I ran into was they were like an old college student. So as far as I remember, I was always the youngest one wherever I go.
So both listening to the music and also playing the music, that there weren't younger kids either listening or playing.
Yes, listening or playing, and really didn't have any anyone who can understand what I'm talking about in the school. So it was just a little bit lonely from that perspective. But I've gained a lot of friends, those who are much older than me, playing bluegrass music in college, and they're all like my big brothers, and taught me how to play guitar and what's good album and what's not, and so on and so forth. So it was a great time for me.
Well, you refer to big brothers, but you literally had a brother who apparently also got into this music.
Yes. My younger brother, he's a 3 year younger than me, was also watching TV and experienced sort of a spiritual feelings of Monroe's music. I really wanted to get mandolin, and I wanted to play like Mr. Monroe, but back in those days in Japan, living in somewhat smaller cities, I did not have access to mandolin, so I ended up buying guitar, and my brother somehow got access to the banjo, and I think that the first banjo we ever bought was like a $90 banjo made in Japan, and he started taking lessons.
And you guys formed a band together?
Yes, we did. We started playing together, and I think when I was 15, that's the first gig I ever had, and made a $20 a night in my hometown, Kyoto.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that the bands always make a whole lot more than that sometimes, these, even today. You know, if you play in a small club and it's a tiny cover or no cover and not enough people come.
Yes, but I think that, I don't know, to me, the money that I make out of music, it looks different to me. It's not the same as regular money. I mean, it's more appealed to me, more valuable than anything else. I don't know what it is, but I'm just extremely happy that my effort is somewhat compensated to the realistic dollars. So, but I had a first gig when I was 15 back in my hometown, and we kept playing different places, bluegrass festivals in Japan as well, and TVs and radio stations, and had a great time playing there. And then I was, when I was 18, I graduated from high school and decided to go to the United States to learn more about the music.
And I would have guessed that if you wanted to learn more about the music, you'd go to Tennessee or Kentucky or something.
Right. I did not know very well about what to expect in terms of music scenes at that time. And the only way that I could stay there a longer period of time in the United States was for being a student. So I picked a school where they had lowest, most reasonable tuitions. So I ended up being the Maryville, Missouri.
And did you find out that how did you find that particular college though?
There was a each major city in Japan has a American Cultural Center or the tourist center, and they have a bunch of information about the schools, of course the tourist places, and so on and so forth. So I went there and then checked the all the information, and sent a letter to them. And back then, of course, we did not have an email, so everything was done by letters.
That would take a while.
Yes, and I prepared for it for almost over the year, course of the year, going back and forth and gathering information. The motivation for me to go to the United States was not only by music, but just really wanted to learn about America.
Partly because this particular music is so quintessential American, and you wanted mm-hmm. to find out more about the country it comes from?
Yes. I did not really have any clear-cut vision at that time, but now I believe that I had very strong interest to learn about America and what their really lifestyles are and what their cultures are and so on and things like that. So that's what really motivated me. I mean, of course, the music is the major part of it, but not necessarily be all because of the whole music or anything like that. But there are some interests beside music as well.
So what did you find out about the United States that seemed, that surprised you, given the music that you had come to enjoy?
Well, the how I brought up in Japan and was that the society itself is just a little different. And I'm not really saying anything negatively or positively, but culture is a different here in the United States and Japan. And the first thing I really noticed was the that it is a really open country. And I was very surprised when I was walking down in Kansas City, on the street on the Kansas City, and somebody came to me and asked for direction. Obviously, I am not from here, but people asking me a question, and it treated me as if I am a local citizen of the United States, which made me very happy, and I found more interest to be a local. I'm not sure about what I'm saying, but I'm sorry. I don't know how to say it very well, but people are very open and freely express their feelings and easily extend kindness to somebody that they have never met before, and I was very impressed with that.
Well, that would seem to, at least in my mind, to fit well with bluegrass as a musical style. I mean, that style of music sort of has that attitude as
yeah.
well. It's very open and welcoming and usually very joyous music.
Yes. Also that through the all the years that I've been involving with music, this music is truly comes from American folks. I mean, day-to-day people, normal people. It is very important to understand that the where the people are coming from and how people appreciate about this music, and understanding that all those surroundings and environment where music surrounding, and I think it's a very important thing to understand about this music.
Well, let's give listeners a little more of an idea of what your music sounds like. We played earlier, that I introduced actually before we started talking, a tune called mm-hmm. These Tears from your most recent album just this year, I guess, called Sunset Drive.
Yes, sir.
And next, one called Skipping Stones. Is this a composition by anybody involved in the performance?
No. This tune is written by my good friend of mine. His name is Keith Yoder. He lives in Iowa now. And he's one of the gentlemen that I have met in the early days of my American life. And great musician and a great songwriter, and also he teaches music as a full-time. And he composed that tune that's called Skipping Stones as an instrumental tune. And I got to listen to his recordings, and I really, really liked it. So I talked to my friend, Mr. White Rice, who's playing on this album as well, to record this song.
And he's playing what?
Wyatt Rice plays guitar, and then Wyatt and I we're doing twin guitars on all tracks of 12 cuts on these albums, and we were working very closely with the rhythm playing, and we focused on the rhythm playing and very tasteful lead playings, and then we put the other instruments on top of our foundation of the music, and that's how we made this album. And I am very proud that we did very good job on this.
Okay, it's a Skipping Stones from Mauro Kawabata's album called Sunset Drive, and he will be joining banjo player Greg Cahill and also fiddler Rachel Johnson, bass player Jill Stargardt. Saturday, 9 o'clock, 9:30 at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. You're listening to Live and Local. Skipping Stones is the name of that tune. Mauro Kawabata guitar, and also Wyatt Rice, did you say his name is?
Yes, mm-hmm. He's the brother of Tony Rice.
On guitar from the disc called Sunset Drive.
Yes, sir.
Who are some of the other folks that you have either toured with or performed a lot with? And also, how did you get to know Greg Cahill?
Greg, well, actually, I lived in Chicago area for many years, and I happened to see his concert one time, Special Consensus, which I think was almost like more than 15 years ago or so. And we started to talk about music and so forth, and we correspond to each other quite frequently, I should say. But didn't really get the chance to play together before. But he has been a very good friend of mine for many years, and I do respect his musical talent and his gentlemanship and the great musicianship.
And who are some of the other folks that you've worked with closely?
I've worked with pretty closely with Mr. Sammy Sheeler. He's the he's a leader of the Lonesome River Band out of Virginia, and him and I did a Japan tour for last three years. And this year he was not able to make it. So, but I played with Sammy for several years for Japan tour, and I've been playing with people like Terry Bakum. He's another great banjo player from North Carolina. And Don Rigsby, he's a great tenor singer, and a mandolin player from Isomville, Kentucky. And those are folks that I play with pretty often.
What is flat picking on a guitar?
Flat picking is basically using a flat pick to play, not the finger style. So you only use the flat pick to hit the strings.
Is that when you say flat pick? Is that, I mean, I'm not a guitarist. Is that the same as what we would normally simply call a guitar pick?
Yeah, there are basically two different picking styles on the guitar. One is using three fingers, like a finger style, and another style is called flat picking. So by using a flat pick to hit the strings.
And did you decide consciously that's how you were going to do that style of playing? Did that come from Bill Monroe, or did that just happen to be how you first learned?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because when bluegrass music was accomplished as an independent music style, as a bluegrass music. The guitar player at that time was Lester Flatt, was playing with Mr. Monroe. And Lester was using finger picks, using a thumb pick and also a finger pick on his index finger. And he was using two fingers playing guitar. So it was not really the flat pick guitar, so-called flat pick. The rhythm playing for bluegrass music was played such a style for many years before Mr. Jimmy Martin came along, and he joined the band and he started to do flat pickings. And then after that, it sort of became a standard of guitar playing for bluegrass as a flat pick. And the first thing that I have tried was the Jimmy Martin style flat picking, and that's what I wanted to do. So I had the consciousness to play flat pick from the beginning.
Could guitarists typically do one or the other, or do some guitarists sometimes do one style and sometimes do another?
I think it's really a personal preference, and depending on the volumes and tones that you like, and there are several guitars can be played both very well, as in flat pick and finger style, and some guitars can be outstandingly good for finger style or the flat pick. So I think it's a personal preference. There is no clear-cut answer to it.
But you stick with flat picking.
Yes, I do. And what I do is I do a lot of cross pickings, which is it's really hard to explain by language, but it's more like generating a sound with a flat pick, but the sound like a finger style. So a little bit complicated pickings.
Yeah, if we had a TV show and you were in the studio with us, we could demonstrate to folks.
But yes, I'd be more than happy to.
But we'll have to make do with another song, also from Sunset Drive. We're talking with Mauro Kawabata, who is going to be playing at the Iron Post with various colleagues Saturday evening in Urbana. This next tune called Found Affection.
Yes.
Who wrote this one?
Well, this is actually was written by A.P. Carter, that he considered as he's the one who originated the country music.
Mm.
And this particular song was recorded, I think, in 1930s during the Bristol Sessions in Bristol, Tennessee. A very old song. And I found this song on the old Carter family recording collections. And the minute I hear that song, I just fell in love with it. So this is a great song. So I decided I must do this on the next albums, and I sang on this one too.
Yeah. So who else is who's on this track with you?
This track is I'm singing a lead vocal, and Dawn Rigsby sings tenor, and so is Patty Mitchell. She's another great singer from Nashville, Tennessee. She used to be a member of the Dixie Chicks while she was in Texas. And then Wyatt Rice plays guitar, and Ricky Simpkins plays fiddle. And Ronnie Rice, he's a brother of Wyatt Rice, mm-hmm. Plays bass. And that's pretty much it.
Okay, Found Affection from
yes,
Sunset
sir.
Drive with Mauro Kawabata here on Live and Local.
Once you loved, you found affection. Oh, my home. Never on earth will I call you mine.
Found Affection is the name of the tune, featuring on lead vocals and on guitar, Mauro Kawabata and various colleagues from the disc called Sunset Drive. And you can hear him with some other colleagues Saturday evening at the Iron Post.
Yes.
Mauro, I was reading on your bio from your website,
yes,
you spent some time talking about you're coming back and forth between Japan and the United States and initially trying to learn the technique of mm-hmm. playing this mm-hmm. music, but then you talk about needing to, I'm quoting here from you, get past technique and get closer to the mind, unquote, yes. of those who came to bluegrass as a natural part of their lives. What do you mean by that?
Well, what that means that when I started bluegrass music, I was just really impressed with music, that how well it can be played, how fast you can play, or how beautifully you can play. I'm just more like a technically driven mind that I had. But this music has a whole lot more than that, not only with the technical or skills of music, but it has something that this music was generated based upon the day-to-day life of American people. That may not be people in New York City or Los Angeles, but I think it's a backbone of America is strongly existing in this music. And unless I understand about that concept very well, I thought I would never be able to play this music. And that's what I really meant to say.
And I just forgot what I was going to ask you about that. Well, then we'll leave it go. Tell me a little bit about Rachel Johnson, who's a fiddler going to be joining you, and bass player Jill Stargardt. Have you worked
yes.
with them?
Rachel Johnson is from Bristol, Tennessee, and she's a very young lady and a great fiddle player, and she's a good singer, too. I met Rachel about 2 years ago through Mr. Sammy Sheeler. Sammy Sheeler introduced me to her, and she ended up coming to Japan, going to Japan with us for the Japan tour in, I think that was 2009. And she did very good on performance, and also she was a very nice person to travel with, always smiling, happy, and she makes very good music. So ever since that Japan tour, I stay in touch with her very closely and try to play music as often as we can.
And Jill Stargardt?
Yes, and Jill is actually live in the Yorkville, Illinois, and I met her at the Bluegrass Festival in Illinois somewhere a long time ago, and I have seen her so many times here and there at the festivals or jams and things like that. But I think it's about 3 years ago, we started to pick up some performance together, playing at the coffee shops and the little gigs here and there. She's a great singer and a great bass player. And she's from the highly talented musical family as well. So I always enjoy very much playing with her.
So this really should be a wonderful night of bluegrass music with at least three singers. Does Greg Cahill sing also?
Greg sings a harmony part, and I don't really think he sings any lead. But we have three singers. I mean, three people can sing a lead, and of course Greg is a great banjo player.
So
and,
will we be hearing any four-part harmony then on Friday or Saturday?
We will see what we can do. Yes, and we really have not finalize our set list yet, but we would like to incorporate some of the holiday music as well, and we'd like to make some good acoustic music, and hope that the people, those who come and see us, will enjoy our music.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I don't know how they wouldn't. Certainly from hearing some of the samples that we've given them. Mauro Kawabata is with me here on Live and Local today, and he's a guitarist. He's going to be joined by Greg Cahill of the Special Consensus Bluegrass Band on banjo, and then Rachel Johnson on fiddle, Jill Stargardt on bass, and various of them doing some singing. Saturday night, 9:30 at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana. And let's go out with one more from your most recent disc called Sunset Drive.
Yes, sir.
Goodbye, Liza Jane. This seems like a tune that I am likely to know.
This is Liza, Goodbye Liza Jane is basically originally written as a Texas swing fiddle tune, and we made a little adjustment to be more like a bluegrass style, and I really enjoy recording this because of the tempo and the rhythm. It was so live, and I had a great time making my guitar lead on this one too. So this is one of my very favorite on the album too.
Oh, great. Well, then it's a great one to go out with.
And I hope to see a lot of people there.
Well, I hope to be among them. So thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you. And Kevin, thank you so very much for the this opportunity. And I really, really appreciate that.
Guitarist Mauro Kawabata and friends, and a tune called Goodbye Liza Jane. And you can go out here and hear him and a different set of friends at the Iron Post in Urbana, Saturday night, 9:30. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program is made possible with support from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign, a fair trade retailer offering handcrafted holiday decor and gift items from around the world for every member of the family. A gift from 10,000 Villages is a gift that gives twice. That's known as the Song of the Bagpipers in Sicily, Naples, and elsewhere in Italy. It's called Quando Nascete Nino, and it opened with music played on a bagpipe called a zampogna and was joined by a sham and other instruments, members of the Taverner Consort on Live and Local. And my next guest on the show is a member of the Mugdock Pipers, who present a Celtic Christmas at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. This is our unadvertised special on the program. And Paul Hinson is a member of that group. And the first thing I asked him when I spoke with him earlier this morning from his home in, well, I guess his office somewhere near Charleston, was who are the Mugdock Pipers and what is a Mugdock?
Mugdock is a castle in Scotland near Glasgow, and it was the property of the Grahams, and our founding member was connected with the Grahams somehow.
And the Grahams are a family?
The Grahams were are a clan in Scotland, yes.
And it's pronounced Mugdock, as
Mugdock,
opposed,
yes.
Even though it looks like Mugdock.
Right.
And so then, who are the Mugdock Pipers? Pipers.
We've been around for, 45 years or about there.
Oh, no kidding.
We're just a well-known secret in the Champaign-Urbana area.
well-known secret.
Or unknown secret, I guess I should say. Or well-kept secret. We were founded by a guy named Jim Lynch, who is a retired art professor at U of I. And he's the connection for the Mugdock name. And over the years, we've had, quite a few people, I think as many as 10, and right now we've got six or seven. Most are living in the Champaign-Urbana area, and we've got two outliers. There's a fella in Villa Grove, and I live down in Oakland.
And this concert with the Pipers will be just Scottish pipes or other
right.
instruments?
It'll be mostly Highland bagpipe. I think one of the ladies is planning to play what's called a small pipe. It's much quieter and smaller than the Highland bagpipe.
Is that the Illan pipes?
No. This,
or something else?
Their trade name is Fireside Pipe. And they're kind of a downsized version of a Highland bagpipe, much quieter, much easier on the ears in an enclosed area. and we've got, I think we've got a violin player who's going to play something or other also.
Something or other. Does this mean that it's not exactly a written program? Is it going to be?
Well, no, there's a set program for the ensemble performances. Or for the ensemble playing, there's a set program. The solos are going to be announced as they come up.
And the music is going to be settings for pipes of familiar Christmas music, or
yes,
things that are
part,
particularly
got,
Celtic?
Pardon me?
Or things that are particularly Celtic?
We were playing a few Celtic things. Let's see. Well, we're doing Amazing Grace, Highland Cathedral, which has been real popular, like at the Edinburgh Tattoo. Something called When the Pipers Play, which is a variation on the folk song Wally Wally.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing an arrangement of Auld Lang Syne and something else. William will come back again, I think.
Plus plus the familiar carols. How often do pipers do Christmas concerts?
Not very often. In this area, there's only been one other that I can remember. We've got a small pipe band down here based in Charleston, and they did a Christmas concert in 2006 down here. And that was kind of the inspiration for the Mug Ducks doing one up in Champaign this coming Friday.
So this is the first time around for you guys?
First time around for us for a Christmas concert, yes.
Do the Pipers ever get with drummers?
We do. There just aren't any Highland Scottish-style drummers in the Champaign area, as far as I know. There are pipe bands in the area in like Springfield, Bloomington, down here in Charleston, Covington, Indiana area, but in Champaign and Urbana, as far as I know, there aren't any Highland-style drummers.
So a pipe band typically will have pipers and drummers.
Right. Normally it's there's a corps of pipers, and then snare drums, tenor drum, and bass drum.
And then some of those drums they really do have a particular sound to them.
Right. Right.
Really tight and dry, I think of it.
Pardon me?
Rather tight and dry sound.
Yeah, it's they really ratchet the drum heads down very tight, so they're pretty high pitched. With the snares, the tenor drums are tuned, if I remember right, tenor drums are tuned to the tenor drones of the bagpipe, and then the bass drum is tuned to the bass drone of the bagpipe.
When you've mentioned this Christmas program on pipes to friends, as I'm sure you have, how often do you get groans with the idea of Christmas music being sullied by bagpipes, given some of the stereotypical reactions?
I really don't get it that much down here. I don't hear much negative feedback. It's kind of like, you know, I like to say it's kind of like Franklin Roosevelt. Either they liked him or they hated him. And same thing with bagpipe. There's not much in between.
I've always thought it could be a particularly exciting sound, particularly when, especially when there's an acoustic surrounding you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty nice acoustic where you're going to be playing Faith United Methodist Church. It's
yes, it is.
Carpeted church, and yet it's got a real warm, rich sound. In fact, I heard you play there once.
Right. I performed with the Prairie Ensemble several years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. We should do that piece again. I remember it was An Orkney Wedding with Sunrise by
right.
Peter Maxwell Davies, and kind of a dramatic entrance of the lone piper who was Paul Hinson in that case. You have an interesting admission charge for this concert.
Right. The idea, when we first started floating the idea, we thought, we took inspiration from the concert that was down here in Charleston. The admission fee was a donation of non-perishable food or cash. And so so that's what it is up there also. Everything is going to benefit meal and mission programs for Faith United Methodist Church.
And canned goods are suggested, or peanut butter, cereal, packaged noodles, and then there's et cetera, so people just use their judgment. Non-perishable
right.
foods, of course, is the way to go. Well, it's a Celtic Christmas with the Mugduck Pipers at Faith United Methodist Church on South Prospect Avenue in Champaign. It starts tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And Paul Hinson, how many of those 45 years have you been a member of the Pipers?
I started playing with them in 1998.
So nothing close to 45.
Nothing close. No, we've got our one original member. I think he's going to be there, but he's not playing with us this year.
But he might be cheering you on.
Yes.
All right. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and I hope it all goes well, and I appreciate your letting me know about it and also talking to us on the show.
Okay. Thank you.
Tail end of An Orkney Wedding with Sunrise by Peter Maxwell Davies. Here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us for the show. Here's a quick look at some of the events you can go and see and hear live in our listening area. It's Irving Berlin's White Christmas continuing at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan tonight through the weekend. John Cariani's play Almost Maine wraps up tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at the Station Theater in Urbana, 8 o'clock performances each evening. Kilbourne Alley Blues Band is at Doherty's Pub and Pin in Decatur tonight at 7 o'clock. It's the Sam Hastings Quartet with Chip Stevens at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7. Pamela Makala with Megan Johns and the Fantastic Bananas are at the Canopy Club in Urbana tonight at 9 o'clock. It's double bassist Joel Kelsey in a Millikan University faculty recital tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at Kuiper Hall on campus in Decatur. The Jeff Helgeson Quintet is at the Iron Post in Urbana tomorrow evening at 5. Keith Harden and friends are playing at various times throughout the next week, including Friday night at Bentley's Pub in Champaign, Saturday in Champaign at Huber's, and Sunday at 8:30 at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana. An Advent concert by pianist Samir Golescu is at University Place Christian Church in Champaign tomorrow at 12:30. Pianist Richard Rossi and violinist Anna Cromwell are at the Cathedral of the Immaculate Conception in Springfield at 7:30 tomorrow night. It's the holiday jazz concert by the Millikan University Faculty Jazz Sextet Saturday evening at 7:30 in Charleston at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. Illinois Symphony Orchestra gives their Holiday Pops concert Saturday night at 8 in Springfield and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Bloomington. And the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana are at Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign Sunday night at 7:30. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYNL-FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. Support for our show today comes in part from the Corkscrews Bouvand Wine Bar, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with a full list of wines from around the world by the glass and by the bottle. Wine tastings are held every Saturday from noon to 4. Information is at 217-337-7704 or on Facebook at Bouvand's Wine Bar.